Hi guys, this is Fish on a Heater, one half of the wildly successful PvP Corner podcast with DeFi E250. Before we start today's episode, I wanted to take a moment and describe my day yesterday. So I got up, recorded the podcast with DeFi E250, and it was a good episode. It was fun recording with it. It's always fun recording with DeFi. And then afterwards, I tried to edit as much of this as I could before heading off to work. And so I got about halfway through it. I went to work, was working till about 2 in the morning. And then when I came home, understandably, just crashed into bed, fell asleep immediately. And when I woke up, oh boy, had the world changed. So for those who haven't heard, the Sylph Road, and by extension the Sylph Arena, has announced that they are ceasing operations, which is huge for the PvP scene, because the Sylph Arena invented the concept of a globally competitive PvP system. Without them, there'd be no GBL, and none of us would be here at all. So, yeah, this is huge news, and unfortunately, we did record this episode before that news came out, so there is a Sylph check-in section still, and there's no mention of this news. We will talk about it in greater depth in the next episode, but for now, enjoy what we've got. It is a fun episode. See you on the other side. Hi, I'm Fish on a Heater.
And I'm DeFi250.
And this is PvP Corner, the PvP podcast that throws back-to-back body slams. DeFi, what is going on in PvP?
I have been enjoying Open Ultra League more than I thought I would. So that's definitely a surprise for me. I've been running the same team that I found over on the BTW podcast server.
Which was what again?
It was Pidgeot in the lead. And you just, according to Wildcat Dad, you just Brave Bird everything.
Yep.
Everything gets Brave Birded. And then I have a Swampert and a Kabalion. And I'm enjoying it. And it's actually Open Ultra League and Sunshine Cup. We've had Sunshine Cup for about a day now as of recording. And I haven't gone into it. I'm just kind of sticking with that Open Ultra League meta because I'm still getting positive sets. I was so mad. I was talking to Fish before stream how tired I am today. Like, I'm pretty tired. I'm exhausted. I was battling and watching Twitch. I was just like, I'm just going to get like one set done today. And I completely zoned out and forgot to shield. I had 2 shields remaining and I lost.
Oh, no.
And I would have gotten a 5-0 because I went on to win the rest. And it's just such a...
Wow. Yeah. But
I'm still getting positive sets with this team. And until I really find that I'm not enjoying this Open Ultra League team anymore, I think I'm going to keep running it.
Yeah, good. My experience with GBO lately has been... Well, with PvP lately has not been great. A few weeks ago, like the week before I went to Melbourne for OCSE, I was on record saying that like I'm in some kind of godlike form and I was just winning everything, things I had no right to win. Well, I'm now on the very opposite end of the spectrum. I am losing everything I turn my hand to, and like GBO and tournament formats both. I lost 60 points in Go Battle League before I got out of bed this morning. So like, how was your day? That's been me. I'm glad to hear you're having success, though. I can live vicariously through you.
All right. And I'm sure you'll shake it off, get some rest, come back to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe the game will be working better when you come back to it. Maybe you take a nap. Maybe if you take a nap and come back, it'll be like someone turned the game off and on again. Kind of like the Pokemon. Like lately, it's like they turned the Pokemon off because you can't see them.
Which is weird because like I don't know if anyone else's experience has been different, but like for me, that invisible Pokemon bug has like it hasn't affected, as far as I'm aware, the battles at all. It's purely just a visual thing.
I know it makes it so you can't switch out.
Oh, is that right? I haven't even noticed that.
Usually when it happens to me, it's at the very end of a battle. So, yeah. Like, it's very tail end. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think same for me as well. So that's crazy that it's happened to me so many times, and I've never had a situation where I've tried to switch in that moment.
Yeah. It's wild. Maybe they'll fix it. Maybe it'll get fixed.
Hope so.
But in the meantime, if you're looking at Great League Sunshine Cup, just a reminder, it's normal type city. Pidgeot, Noctowl, Dubwool, Vigoroth, XL Diggersby, Victini, Galarian, Stunfisk, Gliscor, Miltank, and Gligar are your PB Poke top 10. I've been seeing online people running Dubwool. It makes me jealous because I do not have a Dubwool. Where is Wooloo? Bring back Wooloo. Justice for Wooloo. Justice for Wooloo. Bring it back. I miss that little sheep. I don't know what event they're going to do, but we need it. Mm-hmm. We need Dubwool back. Hopefully in this next season, it'll be a seasonal spawn. That would be really nice. Watch, it'll just be in the Southern Hemisphere. Southern Hemisphere gets Dubwool, and I will cry.
We get it during Australian springtime. So American fall.
I hope I don't have to wait that long. It's been so long already. Taking one more week into the future, we have Open Master League and Little Element Cup. Little Element Cup, so that's 500 CP or under. It's only Fire, Grass, and Water-type Pokemon, and only Pokemon that are able to evolve and have not even once evolved are eligible. Your top 10 here, Ducklett, both the regular and the shadow. Chinchou, regular and shadow Vulpix, regular and shadow Bulbasaur, Salandit, Vulpix, shadow Wooper, Ferroseed, Lileep, but only the special Bullet Seed Lileep that you can't even elite TM to. So I don't know who has Bullet Seed Lileep, but if you do, you are very lucky. Mm. And then Tortuga. So it's time for Nundo the Ducklett to make his reappearance. He's a very good boy. My 000 IV Ducklett that I use for Little Cup. Mm-hmm. Loses every CMP, but then I know I'm gonna lose CMP, so you can use that strategically when you know in that. Advance.
Yeah,
you can plan for it.
After that, to close out the season, we're almost at the end of the season, DeFi. It's flown by for me anyway. Is Open Master League and the Catch Cup Rising Heroes Edition. So this is a Great League Cup where only Pokemon that have been caught during a certain time period are eligible. And no mythical Pokemon. So the copy that we have read from the official Niantic blog post has said only Pokemon that have been caught during Catch Cup are eligible. We're not sure about that. We feel like, because I believe last season it was, they had Catch Cup at the end of the season, and anything that was caught throughout the 3 months of that season was eligible. I don't expect them to have changed it back to just that week. My guess is that it's a typo.
I'm hoping so, because if it's just for the week, I'm definitely not playing it. Like, I'm not gonna build Pokemon from the week.
Yeah. Like, literally, you'd have to go outside, catch stuff, and then come back. And it means that, like, for the first at least few hours of that cup, there will be literally no one queuing up.
There's a ton of stuff. Like, I know we had, like, the Slowpoke Community Day. I have all my spawns from that. I have a bunch of Joltik. I have a bunch. Yeah, I've got things I'd build in here from 3 months worth of stuff. Stuff that I even labeled, like, for that I should build for PvP. I am not building something for just a week. That would be silly.
No. And, like, with Stardust being at such a premium, like, I've constantly said in the past, I'm unwilling to build things specifically because, like, I'm unwilling to build a duplicate of something specifically because the one that I already have can't be used for that 1 week. All right, so that is the Catch Cup. We also have Open Master League, and we did want to just quickly run through the top Pokemon for Open Master League, which are Groudon at number one with the Legacy Precipice Blaze and Legacy Fire Punch. So a double Legacy Pokemon at number one, which is unfortunate. Rated the exact same, though, at number two is Lugia with Dragon Tail, Sky Attack, and Aeroblast, which is also an Elite TM move. Giratina Altered So that is the one with the legs. I'm actually surprised to see that Altered is rated higher than Origin here. Solgaleo in fourth, Kyurem in fifth, Lugia, Shadow Lugia, that is, Dragonite, Meloetta, Shadow Mewtwo, and Hero Form Zacian.
Yep, regular Mewtwo also works. Seeing Rayquaza up there too, with double legacy Breaking Swipe, Hurricane, is also kind of nuts. Like, I'm not used to seeing Rayquaza really be viable in the Master League.
Actually, this reminds me of something that came up on one of my streams recently, where a player, a viewer came in and mentioned that they were returning to the game, and like they pointed out how ridiculously hard it is for them to get a whole bunch of the relevant Pokemon, because there's so many Elite TM moves now. Like, you only get like two or three Elite TMs of each type per season. And like, there's you know, Hydro Cannon, Swampert, Frenzy Plant, Venusaur, like, well, not just Swampert and Venusaur, there's Hydro Cannon, everything, and Blast Burn and Frenzy Plant, everything. There's Wing Attack on Charizard. There's, we just looked through the top 10 of Master League, and there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Elite TMs required just to build out the top 10 Pokemon. Like, that makes it very, very hard. And then if you go to number 11 and 12, that's another 4 there. So that makes it very, very hard for new players.
I completely agree. And it's not super easy to get those Elite Charge and Fast TMs. You have to do a lot of Go Battle League in order to do that, or you have to buy them in like a special box. So I have a big stack of Elite TMs lying around. Like, I could make all of these Pokemon probably right now if I wanted to, but I've been playing the game forever. Not make them as in like max them all out to 50, but I could, you know, get them on the right move sets.
Yeah. I don't even think I could. How many Elite TMs do I have? I have 11 Charge TMs. So I couldn't even build those top 12. I would miss out too. And I've been playing for many a year now.
Yeah, so just something to note again for Open Master League.
So I think we're done with our GBL section, right, DeFi?
I believe so. Let's move on to Sylph Check-In. And we are in Arcana. Arcana Cup being the individual Sylph meta for the month. We have the PV Poke Top 10 of Pelipper, both regular and Shadow Shiftry, Gengar, Mew, Shadow Honchkrow, Tyrant, Runorigus, Kofagrigus, Shadow Alolan Marowak, and Haunter. I signed up for a tournament, Fish. I signed up for 4 tournaments. Did not practice at all.
Yep.
Built some things that I haven't practiced with. So that's how we do. That's how we roll. Been working. Not the greatest for me, but you know. Oops, I did it again.
That's kind of our norm now. It's like, yeah, didn't really do the research. Not doing great, but oh well.
Yep. I mean, I looked what I did and what I said I was going to do, because Arcana is what has been used in Sylph factions. I went to the Emerald tier of Sylph factions and I looked at what people were using on their teams. And I built a team. I think I just copy and pasted a team that I found that I liked.
Yeah, that's definitely
not a horrible strategy.
A way to do it. Yeah,
it's not a horrible strategy. It's a strategy, probably not the best strategy, but it's far from the worst.
I've taken so long to get around to actually settling on a team that I've missed the start of most of the tournaments that I normally play. So my Go Stadium lobby, I've missed yet another tournament there, so definitely not getting promoted in Go Stadium. The GoCast tournament, I just woke up, I'm like, oh, it started already? Darn it! Just a whole bunch of tournaments that I normally play, I just wasn't ready for in time. So now I'm like looking around, trying to find any communities that I'm in that haven't started their Sylph Cups yet. Otherwise, like, I've never missed, I've played every single, literally every single cup since, what was it, 2019, the first year of Sylph? I ain't missing out on this one.
All right. That's good. I think I've made all of the cups as well. I don't think I've missed a single cup. I've missed certain tournaments. Mm-hmm. Like, I definitely haven't done every single GoCast tournament or every single Girls That PvP tournament, but I've hit every cup at least once. So, yeah, I signed up for my typical four. We'll see how I do with a team that I borrowed and copy-pasted. Well, I'll be sure to report back.
Just for the sake of discussion, the team I am currently looking at is Kofagrigus, Jumpluff, Gengar, Tyrant, Malamar, and Sudowoodo.
I like Sudowoodo.
Yeah, oh yeah, Sudowoodo is a fun Pokemon. And apparently beats Pelipper in, well, definitely the Zero Shields. I don't know about the One Shields. I better check that up because that is important. Yes, it does. It does beat Pelipper. Doesn't even have to land a Meteor Beam. It can just go straight Rock Slide and will beat Pelipper in the ones.
Now we know. Thank you for playing.
All right, so that's Sylph. Let's move on to Play Pokemon. We had two Play Pokemon events over the weekend. One in Portland and the other in Sao Paulo in Brazil. DeFi, you said you managed to catch some of the Portland stream?
I did, and it was so much fun. We had not one, but two ladies make it to Top Cut, which is a very rare and momentous occasion. So that's what I was most excited about in Portland, was to see two ladies make it on, En Hoff and Emma 5 Cents, both women who have participated in my faction, the Queen Bees. Emma is currently my faction's teammate. So it was very exciting to cheer her on as well as Hoff. And also, one of our easily most accomplished battlers in Play Pokemon got the championship, which is it's Axon, claimed the championship for Portland, running Registeel, Purified Sableye, Shadow Swampert, Shadow Alolan Ninetales, Noctowl, and Medicham. And I believe this was the exact same team he ran the last time he played, which was in Canada somewhere. Can I remember the name
Canada
of the city?
Somewhere.
But it was the Canadian tournament. Vancouver? Was Vancouver the most recent one?
Yeah.
Okay. Whichever one he was most recently at, I believe this was the same team that he ran. Taking a look at his tournament run, he stayed in the winner side of the bracket, beating Haydonis Actual and then a Shady Equation, had to play Rubik's Master in the grand finals, and swiftly defeated him, no bracket reset, to claim the championship. So very exciting stuff. Some of the other players was really happy to see Emma 5 Cents running her Toxicroak. That was really, really fun to see. Just a Pokemon that's very different. Rubik's Master with the Azumarill and Shadow Kanto Ninetales. En Hoff, of course, running Tapu Fini. I would expect nothing less from En Hoff. And then Haydonis actually running an Obstagoon as his counter user. A little different since we typically, if we see a counter user, it's definitely Medicham. So seeing Toxicroak, seeing Obstagoon was definitely a fun pick. It was a fun, spicy pick, and it was fun to see those players do well.
Yeah, I certainly love Toxicroak. Obstagoon I don't find as fun, but yeah, Toxicroak, I was considering running that in Perth, actually, as my counter user. The trouble is, literally all counter users lose to Medicham. So that makes it kind of hard to bring other counter users, but, you know, people are working out a way. And one day I hope to be one of those people.
Green BV put out their data, taking a look at the there were 71 total teams in Portland. The most common cores, like, again, are pretty stable. Lantern, Medicham, Galarian Stunfisk, Noctowl, Galarian Stunfisk, Trevenant. All your same kind of stuff. Galarian Stunfisk overall, not taking a look at the top cut usage, but just the overall usage out of the 71 teams. Galarian Stunfisk, Medicham, Noctowl, Trevenant, Lantern. Like, it is pretty common. There was only one Bastiodon. that came to the tournament. One Komo-o. One Meg Cargo. I want to see that. Two Dunsparces. Three Deoxys Defense. I bet that's because of Kimi Sui, our winner, who our champion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who used Deoxys Defense. People using that. So again, it's Axon, incredibly dominating performance. 2-1 versus Haydanus, 3-2 versus a Shade Equation, and a very quick 3-1 over Rubik's Master. However, if you take a look at the standings, the final standings, it's Axon already qualified. So Rubik's Master and a Shade Equation are now your qualifiers here. Because it's Axon had already qualified, so his qualification passes down.
I saw a tweet from Caleb Peng, which I thought is worth repeating, because he goes, if anyone still thinks that PvP is a luck-based game, look at it's Axon, who's top cut 8 out of 8 regionals, and won, I forgot how many it was, but... Yeah, has qualified for Worlds many times over. And I'm like, well, yeah, I was one of those people who thought that PvP has an incredibly large element of luck to it. But, like, that piece of information is actually very compelling evidence against that idea. That, like, it makes me think of... I've mentioned before that I used to be in the poker scene before I started playing Pokemon Go PvP, and... it would make me laugh when I was, say, dealing for people who were new at the game or like hadn't played before, and they would all just bumble through the game and then laugh to each other about how, yeah, there's no skill in this game, it's all luck. And I'm like, well, no, you just don't know anything about the game. It is very much a game of skill. And I'm thinking maybe the same is true here. Like, I was going around thinking, well, yeah, there is a huge element of luck in this game. Maybe I just don't know enough about the game to have discovered how to negate any sort of influence of luck.
All right. The other regional, it was streamed, not in an official sense, but that took place in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And our winner of that was Paulino Tad, who also... very dominant run through the winner's bracket, beating several of the GBL Lindos players kind of on his way. Those players were all over the place. If you take a look at the bracket, you just see LNDS in front of like half the trainer names, it seems like. So
you might actually have to explain that to the uninitiated. I certainly didn't know what that was until I read a Go Stadium article about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so... GBL Lindos, it's a group of players who kind of all have that LNDS in front of their names. I know I've queued up into several of them in Go Battle League. And it's just a group of players out of Brazil who really love to play Pokemon Go, PvP. They do a lot of GBL. They do a lot of these Play Pokemon tournaments. So that LNDS stands for Lindos.
And Lindos means?
Beautiful.
Beautiful, beautiful game, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Beautiful, something like that.
Lindo is just like any Latin language, like Spanish, Portuguese. Just means like beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of view it like the Brazilian Pallet Town PvP, where like that community is all there helping each other get better at the game and educate each other and share a love of the game.
I agree. So all these players sharing the love of the game, supporting each other. It's really cool to see, you know, like when a Brazilian player is like on stage at some of these events, just like the crowd goes wild. It's mm-hmm. It's really, really cool. It's neat. Taking a look at what we have for some of the Pokemon, Paulino Tad won with a Chestnut, it looks like. Registeel, Shadow Sableye, Shadow Charizard, Shadow Alolan Ninetales, and Lantern. We also see a Shadow Alolan Marowak. I'm looking at a Vigoroth on one of these teams, Toxapex, Frostlass, Shadow Alolan Grimer from Rargef. Very good player, very talented Lindos player as well. A Bastiodon is up here. Very, very good stuff. And I believe there were two women battling in Brazil as well. Gabby, is her name, Gabby Topcut, as well as Spudoid, as well as a female player. Were the two female players in Brazil who top cut. So really good weekend for girls at PvP.
So upcoming, we have Hartford on May 19 to 21. That is this next weekend. Next weekend. There is 165 registered for that, which is craziness. Malmo in Sweden is May 20 to 21. 85 registered for that. The mega weekend is happening June 2 to 4, Milwaukee, with 32 currently registered for that. Torino in Italia, we don't have the numbers for that. I forgot to message my Italian contacts for that. And Santiago, Chile, which was sold out, but more spots have been opened. So if you are listening from Latin America and you plan to play Santiago, Chile, get on it super quick. We have Fresno happening on June 9 to 11, 44 registered for that. Columbus, Ohio, that is the North American Championship. That will be absolutely huge. That's happening from June 30 to July 2, and then there is no more important tournaments happening after that. Oh, hang on, wait, there's this extra note here. Yokohama, Japan, happening August 11 to 13. That's coming up.
Yeah, and that's the first time Fish and I are going to meet each other. We're going to have, like, in-person PvP corner, which is kind of wild.
This is crazy. Like, I'm going to meet you and so many others as well.
I'm so excited.
There's a lot of people going that, like, aren't even competing. Like, I've talked to a lot of people who, like, such as yourself, like, a lot of people who are going just because they want to be part of that experience. GoFest in Osaka is happening the weekend before, so a lot of people are just making a whole trip of it.
Exactly. I'm very excited. It is going to be really good. 2 weeks in Japan, I'm ready. August cannot come soon enough.
Oh, DeFi. We could record that week's PvP corner in the same room.
We could. Or even just do a quick little, I was thinking we could do just a quick little couple minutes like, hey, we're together.
Hey, guys.
We're going to be so busy. There's just too much to do. There is going to be so much to do in such a short amount of time.
Yeah,
I want to get every ounce of travel in. But we could do a little video, like a little vlog of us hanging out together. I think that would be very fun.
Going to Tokyo Disneyland?
Yeah.
sitting in the It's a Small World After All ride.
It is. Lots of good vibes. We could probably gush about how excited we are for Japan for a while.
Yeah.
But let's move on to our mailbag. We have three emails this week. The first one's pretty quick from Superflash1087, just asking about how to get to Legend. They write, Superflash1087 here. I recently have risen to rank 20, and I'm wondering how to get to Ace. And what are the rates for Legendaries and the Pokemon catch rewards? So Legend, after you reach rank 20, then you're put into that MMR, ELO rating system, whatever you want to call it, where you need to win at least 3 of your 5 battles every set to progress. If you win less than 3, your rating goes down. In order to reach Ace rank, your rating has to be at least 2,000 to get to that Ace ranking. Then to get to Veteran, 2,500. So a big jump to get up there. Then Expert, 2,750. And then Legend is 3,000. Such a small percentage of players who do Pokemon Go PvP actually make it to Legend. It is, out of all the people who play GBL, your actual Legend battlers are it's a very small percentage. I've actually never hit Legend before. Mm. I've gotten into the 2900s, I think, in 2 separate seasons. But I've just never been able to quite cross that threshold. So it is it is very, very challenging.
It feels like... Like, if you spend time on Twitter, it feels like every person and their dog is hitting Legend. But yeah, it's actually a very, 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 very small number. As far as the legendary encounters go, so you can only encounter the legendary from rank 20 and above. And I'm looking at the Sylph Road website that actually has kind of user-reported data on GBO encounters. At rank 20, they're saying the encounter rate for Tapu Fini, which is the current raid boss, is 5.1%. At Ace, it's 4%. At Veteran, it is also 4%. And Expert to Legend, it's only been 1.7%. Now, it is important to note that there is much less data for Expert and Legend because, like we said, so fewer people are reaching that level. But that's kind of a guideline. So it seems like around 4% is the mark, 4-5%.
And that makes a lot of sense. If you take a look at all the different Pokemon that are eligible that you could potentially get, you know, there's the Dragonair, there's Lapras, Stratini, depending on what rank you've reached, Noibat, Axew, all of those other Pokemon that are in that pool. And there's about 20 of them. So you take that and divide it up. If you give all of them an equal shot, it's about that 5% mark. Also, Super Flash, in order to win your three battles in a set, so consistently going 3-2 or 4-1 or 5-0, my best personal advice, if I were to just give one piece, because I'm sure we could give a ton of advice right now, but my piece of advice is find a team that you like, that you understand. Maybe you've looked a little bit of it on YouTube, or you've seen a Twitch streamer play it, something like that. You've looked it up. Find a team you like that works, that you've won a few games with, and play it. And just not switch. I find that it's a lot harder to consistently rise in that rating system if you are hopping back and forth between teams all the time. Like, I've been running the same Ultra League team all week. I looked on the BTW server. I saw what Wildcat Dad was running. And I said, I'm going to run that. And I have not changed it up for over a week.
So thank you, Super Flash, for writing in. The next one is from Boz, who wrote in last week and wants to talk about Mint's hypertraining and Mew's PvP potential.
Boz writes, "Hey guys, just want to follow up regarding Mew in the Master League. I want to start out by addressing the leveling issue of Mew. I've been walking my buddy for many, many kilometers trying to level it up. I typically just pay attention to my distance walked and about 18 to 19 kilometers a pop a poffin, going for a walk and getting those 2 XL candies. Hopefully, it is still an insane grind and mine is only a level 44 plus 1 for the best buddy. As I am now only level 41, I haven't had much access to rare XL candies, but will certainly use them towards Mew. As far as IVs go, my Mew is far from perfect, 11, 13, 15, and honestly, the only way I've been able to keep my sanity dumping so much time and resources into this Pokemon is by lying to myself about the fact that we someday may have hyper training. So I'm going to pause there, which definitely answers my question about how do you get a level 50 Mew? He doesn't have a level 50 Mew. So that answers my question there. I also completely agree. Rare XL candies should only be put into legendary Pokemon, in my opinion. Mm. I am mad at myself that I put some into a Lickitung at one point. But I needed it for NAIC. I had a deadline.
Yeah, and it wasn't irritated.
It wasn't much. It was like one level short. I was only one level short. I'd been walking that thing for a long time. But generally, I believe that they should really only be used on legendary Pokemon if you're trying to get the most bang for your buck. Because everything else, you can walk for a reasonable exchange rate. Mm. Legendaries, mythicals, not so much. Hypertraining is a concept from the main series games. And Boz is going to go on to talk about this a little bit in his email. But it's the idea that you could take his Mew that's an 11, 13, 15 and give it some items to change its stats. So he's going to go on to explain that here. Continuing on, Boz writes, "Side note, how easy would this be?" Referring to hypertraining. As there are no EVs per se in the game, you could introduce 3 mints that raise a Pokemon's respective IV stat by 1 point. Bottle caps would max a stat. Golden bottle caps could make hundos. 3 berries to lower stats by 1 point for building great in Ultra League teams. Make them extremely difficult to get, but if nothing else, we need this for mythical Pokemon to even the playing field for PvPers. As DeFi pointed out, you can only get 1 or 2. RNGesus should not decide who can compete with mythicals. Back to Mew's PvP potential. Fish, you mentioned that while Mew can edge out some meta Pokemon, it's not comfortable. And I totally understand that when looking at a simulator, but I swear that's one of Mew's strengths. It definitely takes practice to know exactly what hits you can take, but people sleep on the fact that Mew has a really good defense and stamina stat. and can often eat some super effective charge moves. Along with that, a low health Mew is really misleading to an opponent. I can't tell you how many times people have made the mistake thinking they can farm down Mew just because its health is really low. And it's cost them the match. To your point, you definitely need to know when you're where you are regarding HP, shields, and energy for this to work. Many of my matches end with a win screen of Mew with what appears to be almost zero HP. But if you can get Mew in your back pocket with full energy and the double flame charge or flame charge into wild charge will annihilate a lot of meta Pokemon. I will say Groudon has proven to be a struggle, and I'm still trying to find an answer for that. Maybe Lugia to replace my Dragonite? Thanks for the idea, DeFi. You're welcome. Anyway, sorry again for the long email. Just wanted to give a little more insight into my personal experience with this magnificent mythical. Hope you all are doing well, and definitely don't feel like you need to put this in the show. We did anyway. Just wanted to reach out and share my thoughts. Sincerely, Boz. So Fish, let's address IV training, mints, eat bottle caps. I would love it. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but I love the idea.
I think it's cool. My only hang up is we've mentioned a couple of times in the last few episodes the idea of introducing a mechanic and just gating it behind just making it really difficult, which I don't know if that's the answer to every, like, it's I don't know if that's how you should deal with a potentially game-breaking mechanic. Just make it really difficult to achieve, because for a few reasons, like, people will find a way to optimize their farming of that particular resource to the point that it's not difficult, or you get the other effect where it's just so difficult that everyone's like, well, this is just terrible. Like when Megas first came into the game, like, the way of accruing mega energy, the whole process around that was just so difficult that the general player base was like, well, this sucks. it's all to do with, it's actually a difficult balance to strike because of a concept in gaming called flow, which is the idea that whenever anyone is creating a game, they have to set the difficulty level so that it is just hard enough that you don't get bored, but just easy enough that you don't get frustrated and give up. In most games, that difficulty has to get progressively higher because you are getting better at the game and leveling up, etc. That's not necessarily the case in Pokemon Go, but I think that idea of flow still applies, where for something to be engaging, it can't be too difficult or too easy.
Right. Like the level 50 challenge that just reminds me of, make 999 excellent curveball throws. If you give that to a trainer who just picked up the game, they would be very frustrated.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
But you give it to a trainer who's gotten to that point, who's just about hit level 50. They're like, this is kind of annoying. It's going to take a while, but I can do it.
And on a slightly different tack, we talked about a little earlier the idea of elite TMs. Like, to a new trainer, that idea of how many legacy moved Pokemon you need to be able to compete is just an insurmountable goal. For us who have been doing it for a while, like, it requires the careful planning of your use of resources, but it's certainly doable.
I agree 100%.
So I think that anything that is introducing that, my thing is always just making sense. Like, whatever mechanic is introduced into the game, it just needs to make sense from a thematic standpoint.
Yep. And for anything to get introduced into Pokemon Go for Niantic, it has to be related to getting outside, meeting with people in real life, community in real life, in person, or walking.
Yeah.
Or exercising somehow. So if you can figure out a way to tie it to that, then you've got a winning sell. But it's got to be, because in general, like bottle caps, why would I go out and try to catch a bunch of Beniri if I could just take the one Beniri I have and IV train it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's totally. So you would have to make it very appealing from like a Niantic's pillar standpoint for that kind of thing to get implemented in the game. But to continue on, Fish, do you have anything about Mew's PvP potential? I definitely hear Boz's argument.
Yeah, for sure. And when I said last week that a lot of those wins aren't comfortable wins, that I definitely wasn't saying that, like, oh yeah, it's a bad idea because of that. Like, it's just something you have to be aware of. And it sounds like Boz is totally aware of exactly what Mew's capabilities are. If you know how to use the Pokemon, then it can do a very good job for. Just side note. I was watching one of the, I think it was EUIC, yeah, Zionic was on it, and he was talking about just notable trainers from each region, and I was astounded to be part of that conversation. Zionic brought me up, and he brought up this concept that I think is actually genuinely applicable to a lot of situations, and he talked about the connection between the trainer and the Pokemon, because of the way I used Charizard during OCIC. If you know exactly how much energy you should build up before throwing that move, which move to throw, when to bait and when to nuke, when to just get out of there, switch it out, and when to bring back in, if you understand all those things and more, then you can do so much damage with a Pokemon that a lot of people might write off.
I really agree. It's kind of cheesy, and it's a very Pokemon thing, right? Like, the connection and friendship with your Pokemon. But it's true. Like, yeah, you knowing your IV spread and exactly what you can do with your Pokemon, it makes a difference. And clearly, Boz has spent a lot of time with this Mew, knows it inside and out, and that's a really cool thing.
It's a cheesy way of talking about what actually is a perfectly valid concept.
So, Boz, thank you so much for sharing. And yeah, we did put it in the show. So there you go. Thank you so much for sharing. And we have one more email. It is from someone named HeroIce18 or Brandon. And they're asking about the Go Battle Manager and tapping in PvP.
Brandon says, hi, DeFi250 and Fish, and I just want to quickly point out that this may be the first person ever who has gotten your name exactly right with capitalization and everything.
It warmed my heart when I saw it. I'm not going to lie. Like, oh, they wrote it right.
Yeah.
So, anyone who doesn't, that's okay. But
yeah, for sure.
It's fine. And that also makes me smile and happy that people are writing to me, so yeah. I like that. But it's just kind of fun when people write my name right.
Yeah, for sure. So Brandon says, hope you guys are having a good day and the Stardust is plentiful. I'm pretty new into diving deep into Go Battle League and had a question and great accessibility enhancement to the game. For the question, I faintly remember hearing about Niantic having a Go Battle manager that would help balance out and shake up PvP, but left their position. But it doesn't seem like Niantic is really interested in trying to have someone fill that position. Any ideas why?
Pause.
Yeah.
So, I don't work for Niantic, but it is my understanding that it wasn't that the Go Battle Manager left, it's that the position was cut. So, there is no Go Battle Manager. They're not hiring for a Go Battle Manager. Niantic is not interested in putting resources into that, which is very telling, unfortunately, of Niantic's priorities currently. Current priorities.
Yeah. And this is just word on the street. You can't take this as fact. My personal...
I literally have in my Twitter bio, all opinions are my own.
On my own.
Yep.
Yeah, very, very important to state. Because it is kind of human nature to just take the things we hear online and just accept them. So yeah, we want to make sure that we're clarifying that.
That's my understanding as hearsay. It wasn't that person left. It was that the position was cut and the position no longer exists. And Niantic is not interested in putting resources into a position like that at this time.
My personal belief, again, nothing to confirm that this is actually the case. This is just
we
the
do
conclusion
not speak for
I've
the brand.
Or yeah.
There's a TikToker who used to work for Disney, and anyone who ever used to work for Disney or currently work for Disney, they always have to say, "I do not speak for the brand or the company."
Yep.
So we do not speak for the brand or the company. We only speak for the GoCast podcast, and that's it. And for ourselves.
Having said that, my conclusion that I've drawn is that a huge disconnect between Niantic and the player base is that the player base sees the vision of what PvP could be and could bring to the game, whereas Niantic would only want to invest time and money into it if the players are already there. At the moment, it would appear to them like, well, only like a very small percentage of our player base actually does PvP. So why would we, you know, put all this effort into doing X for the PvP scene?
So again, that's his conclusion. I also just believe Niantic is primarily an AR company, a virtual reality company. They are not a gaming company. They make games kind of, their vision is more of this like AR thing, and they just happen to also make games. So I think they just have, it's like a forest that they tend to, or like a garden, however you want to, let's use garden. And PvP is just one hosta in the garden compared to the whole thing that they have going. And like Pokemon Go is like a section of the garden, but PvP is just one little plant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not interested in putting a lot of resources into this one plant when they're worried about the whole garden. And we're trying to get them like, this hosta needs water. This hosta could be so good.
Could be the prettiest in the street.
Yes, this hosta could be the prettiest thing in the world. I feel like I'm turning into Speediest Chief with his metaphors. He's rubbing off on me.
So that's our daily downer for the day.
No, but the metaphor was cute, though. I thought a good metaphor.
It's a very cute metaphor. I agree with the metaphor. It's a very, really good metaphor. It could be pretty. I don't know what a hosta is, though.
It's just the first plant that came to mind. It's
okay.
A perennial, so it comes up year after year after year, and it's a green, small plant that usually has like one flower up the middle. I will send you a picture. I like hostas.
Okay.
They're pretty low maintenance, which I like. I like plants that are low maintenance.
Low maintenance, yeah. While you look for that, I'm going to move on with the email, which is for the enhancement. One thing I think could be great for PvP is an ATB meter, also known as an active time battle gauge. Similar games like Final Fantasy implements the meter where the character auto-attacks slowly charges over time until he can fire off a special move. Instead of tapping and tapping over and over, I feel like it would be a nice option to have the active Pokemon actively fast attack, filling up the gauge, and then the trainer would hit the special move. I feel like this would help out a lot of people that don't like to constantly tap and promote the ability to hit charge moves or switch out without having to worry about attacking and missing damage. Hopefully that makes sense. Thank you for everything you guys do to help those in the community. Brandon, HeroWise 18.
I have a thought on this. And I think that I think it's an interesting idea. However, I don't think it's great for some of the technical battlers where like you pause your fast attack because you want something else to happen. I feel like it would be difficult then to, you'd have to be able to pause at certain points, because really good technical battlers know when to stop tapping and then resume tapping. So that's something that I am thinking about. And tapping also makes it easier when I want to do like there's a Talonflame in front of me and I want to do two wing attacks and then switch. Mm-hmm. And tapping makes it easier. I feel like tapping would be easier to implement some of those higher level plays.
You and I faced off against each other in the ring yesterday. And there was a moment where I knew your win condition for one of the battles would be to catch a charge move. So when it got to the point where I was about to throw the move, I stopped tapping, waited to see whether your next fast move would start, and then I was going to throw the charge move then. And as it happened, you did choose that exact moment to switch out. So if I had not stopped tapping, then I might have thrown that move into the the wrong Pokemon. It was only pausing for that half a second that enabled me to complete that win, to get that win that I was on my way to.
Yep. So I think that would make it hard. I think that would make lower level play easier, like casual play.
For sure.
But higher level technical play, I think that would be a detriment. But it's an interesting idea for sure. Thank you so much for bringing it up.
Unless there's like it taps automatically and then you have like a button or something that tells it to pause or something like that. But like, again, like there's so few people that utilize pausing in their battles that to code in a button that actually pauses your Pokemon. And then you'd have to, I guess, make a way to resume tapping as well. It's just a lot of effort for the benefit of a very, very, very small number of people.
True.
So thank you to all of those people who got in touch. My favorite part of the show is interaction with listeners, so really appreciate it. Let's move on to our shameless plugs, and we want to give some recognition to people in the Palletown PvP community and GoCast community that have hit achievements. We have Blairstoys and Bandman Clayton in the Palletown server who have hit Expert, and Basher Ball God has hit Legend. And in the GoCast server, Giraffichu and Nabil Psyduck, who is actually a legend here, patron in Palletown as well. We've had one coaching session so far, and now they've hit legend in GBL. So coincidence? I think not. and Triptando has also made it to the leaderboards.
Very, very good stuff. Congratulations to all of those trainers. Those are all amazing achievements, each and every one of you. Couple things to plug. I would like to still point out that I'm doing that St. Jude fundraising for charity all month long in the month of May. twitch.tv/DPHIE250, DPHIE250. And I want to give a big shout out because a lot of the money that I've raised so far has come from the GoCast community. I specifically want to shout out Carlo or Fire Drillin and Boz for being fantastic. And Boz, I saw your message about, hey, DeFi, consider this an incentive to touch on Master League more in GoCast. I'm going to try to cook up some ways we can do that. It's hard when Fish and I don't play it, but I'm going to think about it. But you also continue to write, love what you and Fish do, and we appreciate you, and I appreciate everyone who has donated so far. It means a lot. Fighting against children's cancer is something that is very near and dear to my heart. And the world sucks sometimes. I like trying to do things with my time and with my position, with my voice, to try to make the world suck a little less. So that's what I'm out for with supporting St. Jude Play Live 2023. So in the show description, I do have that May Tiltify fundraising link for St. Jude. So if you could take a look at that, even if you could just, if you don't have the money, that's fine. But if you could share it out, that would mean a whole lot to me. Also, I got some incentives. I bought Bean Boozled and some really hot Tabasco. And if anybody who knows me very well, I don't do spicy food. I don't like it when my food hurts me. So for a certain amount of money, there's an incentive that I will put Tabasco sauce on a cracker and eat it and probably throw up. So if that's something you want, that's an incentive that you could hit.
She's willing to do that for you guys.
Mm-hmm. For the kids. For the kids.
So that's it for this week. To close out, we love hearing from you. If you have any questions or suggestions for myself or DeFi, you can direct that to pvpcorner@gocastpodcast.com. You can send us a voicemail or physical mail to the GoCast PO box. You can take a look at the show description for the phone number and the PO box address. And in that show description, you can also click on More Fish or More DeFi to take you to our other projects and ways to contact us. And may the leads forever be in your favor.
Bye.